Good afternoon, it's 12 o'clock and welcome to the MoneyWeb at Midday Show. My name is Ryk van Niekerk. Well, the markets are not a pretty sight today. Most of the key indicators are in the red. Naspers down quite significantly at one stage this morning, nearly 4% down, while all the financials and banks are also under some immense pressure. The most worrying indicator, however, is the Brent crude price, which seems to continue on its march to $100 a barrel. It's currently trading at $81.20, and with a rand of at around 14 rand 40 to the dollar, we may see a pretty significant increase in the fuel price next month. On the corporate front, Alexander Forbes has fired its CEO, Andrew Darfour. That is with immediate effect. And the group said in a very short statement on Sense that it's lost confidence and trust in Darfour. Very interesting move there. And I think there will be a lot of discussions about what exactly happened there. And I'll speak to Simon Brown of Just One Lap about these and other stories in a minute. But first, let's look at the indicators. The JSE All Share Index down 0.1% currently at 56,543 points. It was down more than 1.5% earlier this morning. Resources has gained 1.3%. Industrials down 2.4%. Financials down 2%. The gold index up 0.2%. On international markets, the FTSE 100 has gained 0.2%, the DAX up 0.1%, as the COC 40 also 0.1% higher. Earlier in Southeast Asia, the Nikkei 0.15% higher, Shanghai lost 0.6%, and Hang Seng also down 1.6%. Let's look at the exchange rate. The rand is currently trading at 14 rand 36 against the dollar, 18 rand 91 against the pound, 16 rand 91 against the euro. The dollar is trading, or the euro is trading at $1.17, the pound at $1.31, Bitcoin at $6,407 or 96,577 rand. Gold is trading at $1,199, platinum at $831. Brent crude currently $81.22. Very, very worrying there indeed. And on the capital market, the R186 currently at 9.16%. Simon Brown from Just One Lap. Simon, welcome to the show. Let's start with Andrew Darfour. Very interesting developments there. He was fired. Very, you know, it seems like it's a sudden decision. What did you make of that?
It is sudden. He only joined just under 2 years ago. He joined Alexander Forbes. And they'd had a tough time leading up to that. He had put a strategy in place for 2022. They had a fancy name for it. I don't recall the name of the strategy. And obviously, the board's deciding not working. Now, he's not the first CEO to be fired, but he's certainly, you know, usually it's like, you know, for personal reasons, wish him all the best and stuff like that. This is Alexander Forbes, which I think credit to them, saying, you know, it's not working. We bought the CEO and isn't going as we planned, and we have taken remedial action, which in essence is to summarily fire him henceforth.
But no, usually when you lose confidence in a CEO, you just don't, you know, drop the hammer or the guillotine. In this case, there is a managed process. Do you think there's something sinister at play here?
There might be something more to it. I mean, if we read directly what they're saying, you know, losing confidence and the like could mean many things, and there could be something more sinister to it. It could also be a process that's been playing for longer than we are necessarily aware of. That might be something from 6 months ago and they've tried the process, etc. But the other side of the coin is it is perhaps just a board who have been under pressure. As I said, Alexander Forbes wasn't performing. He really was brought in to sort of fix it up. 2 years in, they might be looking at this and saying, sorry, we got the wrong guy, which is interesting because, of course, the board employs him. And I wonder if there's any culpability on their part for essentially employing the wrong person, perhaps, depending on what that full background story ends up being.
Yeah. Let's look at the market. The All Share down more than 1%. It was actually recovered from the losses earlier on this morning. What is at play here?
So, we're playing a bit of catch-up with U.S. and Asian markets. We were obviously closed yesterday for Heritage Day, so we got a catch-up sort of Friday evening and then Monday as well. And we saw weakness around the world in global markets yesterday. The Trump $200 billion $100 billion tariffs onto China come into effect yesterday, and their reciprocal $60 billion tariffs coming back, and the fact that China has said, no, we don't want to have those talks. There were talks about talks, etc., and that's now being pulled. So there was some, certainly some spookiness happening there, and I expected a weaker day. I didn't expect to see Naspers down at 1.4% this morning. I know we've seen some tech stocks under pressure in the US. I know Tencent generally has been under pressure, but Naspers is, and it's now just 3.5% off, but that really has been our large driver to the downside.
Yeah. The crude price of crude oil, South Africa is one of the countries in the world that is the most exposed to a higher fuel price. And the current trajectory is really concerning because that can cause havoc in our economy in the short term.
It absolutely can. You know, and last month, you must remember that we didn't get the full petrol price increase. The government swallowed some of it. The question is, for how much longer can they? The short answer is they can't. We don't have the money. We don't have the revenue. We can't go and find more revenue somewhere else. We don't have the capacity for it. And the story's really been OPEC saying, nope, they're happy with current prices. They're not looking to, you know, pump more production, particularly Saudi Arabia, and hence the price above $80. You mentioned in your intro, you know, what of 100? And it's been there in recent years, about 3 or 4 years ago, it was above 100. And at that point, that didn't make a lot of sense. But with the slight tightening we've seen from OPEC, demand coming through predominantly driven from the US, but other demand as well, certainly we're at risk if we don't start seeing production increases from large members. You know, some of the smaller ones can come and help, but they're not going to make significant difference. We need a Saudi Arabia and Iran, of course, problems there with sanctions. And that oil price is scary because, as you say, it immediately hits the motorist. Anyone who's using any form of transport, which immediately means less money out there to spend in a year that's already been immeasurably tough for most consumers in South Africa.
Yeah, Sasol 4% up this morning, and that is definitely not a surprise.
No, Sasol been looking fairly good recently, got back, I think, to the 580s, almost back to the 600, bit of a pullback on it, but now with oil moving, the rand is stronger over the last month or so, but still at 14 odd, you know, 2 months ago it was 13 odd, so picking up some steam there as well. And of course, longer term for Sasol is their Lake Charles project starts coming online, which means the CapEx spend stops and they can start generating some revenue for that, which makes them less dependent on oil as they start to use oil and gas as a feedstock in their ethane cracker plants.
Yeah. We seem to have our internet back online, so I can look at some individual shares that are performing well. Kumba Iron Ore up 4.2%, Assore up 6.7%, Goldfields 3.9% higher, MTN gained 3.4%. On the downside, Implats down 9%, Netcore 3.8% down, Naspers 3.6% down, 3,130 rand, on the bottom end of where it actually started the year. Discovery down 3.25%, and Mediclinic also down 3%. Why? This is one theme that actually came through over the last few weeks, and that is that financials, I think, are being hit harder than most of the other sectors. Even in the industrials, where the local economy does play a big role. Why is this pressure on financials?
I think it's a great question, because financials are not expensive. They're probably fairly valued, particularly if you look at some good dividend yields coming out of them. And I think that there are perhaps a couple of concerns. Consumers under pressure, always concerns around how that plays into bad debts, impairments, as the banks call it. Typically, what we have seen over the last couple of years is the big four banks have kept their impairment levels very, very low, from ranging from under 0.5% to, at the top end of the range, around 0.8%, which is really good considering the pressure. I think there's been some concerns around expropriation without compensation, but at this point, I think those are unjustified until we get more insight. President Ramaphosa did put a 10-person panel together last week with some really quality names on it. So I think it's just skittishness. And banks often are viewed as a You know, whereas you talk about your currency being sort of like your best way to vote on an economy, and the bond rates, the government bonds as well, typically your longer bond rates at the same time. But I think banks as well. And if we can't get our economy going again and we continue to bumble along at, let's say, 0% GDP, where do the banks get their growth from? They've got some Africa, rest of continent exposure, but truthfully, not significant amounts at this point. Varying degrees. Standard Bank will hate me saying that, but it's not huge at this point. And they're really just competing to steal customers from each other, which is an expensive process. And then the risk, as I said, those impairments potentially rising. So what we're seeing with banks is 1 week they're up a bit and everything's fine and rosy, and then suddenly the sellers just arrive again. And certainly that has been the trend. You know, the Indy's driven by Naspers, but the banks generally have just been a weak space for probably pretty much of this year, whereas the Resi 10s had a great year, in large part thanks to the weak ZAR, but certainly the stocks have benefited from it.
Yeah. What did you make of the stimulus package from the President? Do you think it can induce the recovery we so desperately need in the short term?
I think it can, but, and it's a giant but, that with respect to President Ramaphosa, and I understand what he was doing, it is light on detail. You know, some of it, for example, he's talking about spectrum and quickly getting that spectrum out, and chatting with some experts in the field, we could see spectrum auctions as early as the new year. That firstly generates some revenue, and in the current climate, you know, every billion counts, but also just open up and start creating some activity around that sort of space. But a lot, you know, phrases like shovel ready are, with respect to the President, a great phrase, but overused. You know, where are these shovel-ready projects? A $400 billion infrastructure fund is a great idea, but, you know, you've got to get the money, and then you've got to get it spending. He also pushed some of it off to the medium-term budget policy statement, which is, what, 4 weeks away, so in fact 3 weeks, I think, it's relatively close. So we didn't see, you know, from a high level, yeah, this absolutely can work. But the devil's always in the detail, and the devil is even more so in the actual implementation. And that's what we've got to start seeing.
I was in the Kruger National Park this weekend, and we had a few nice braais. And, of course, you talk about the country when you have a beer in the hand. And it's not scientific, but, you know, from a straw poll of about four people I spoke to, people are negative, and these are business people employing many people. And I think what the President needs to do is just to convince those people, listen, things will calm down and it will improve and it will not affect your business. You need to get that person to open another shop or another manufacturing plant. Government's ability to, you know, have a match and then ignite something is very limited.
It is, and particularly when you don't have the money behind it. You know, we and he did say he wants to make this budget neutral, and that makes it very hard. So we do need to instill that confidence. And I think what's happened is we've got the lost decade, essentially, of former President Zuma's reign, and we know that, and we're seeing it at the Zondo Commission, and with the details of just how bad it was are coming, and they're going to carry on coming. The SARS Commission, same story. And there was huge hope, and we saw the markets in November, December, January after NASREC, and in fact our currency peaked at 11:55 the evening President Ramaphosa announced his budget. But what he needs, sorry, his cabinet. What he really needs is some quick, easy wins. And I think, I chatting this a few weeks ago with friends of mine, what would be those quick, easy wins? I mean, we struggle to come up with stuff. I mean, sure, there's some things you can do perhaps around labor, around red tape. None of them that quick and not always easier. And that's the bind he finds himself in. He's essentially turning around the largest economy in the continent. And that is a huge job to do. In previous problems that we've had, it's been of a global nature. So, you know, the rest of the world starts to recover and you kind of hook onto their coattails. We've disconnected from those coattails.
When we hosted the World Cup in 2010, one of the ideas that worked absolutely fantastically well was a special tourism police and a fast-track process through our criminal justice system for tourist-related crimes, and it worked well, and we drew a a big number of foreign tourists. I think that is the easiest win we can get, is a massive international marketing campaign for South Africa, and then pushing out a safety program, tourism police, call it what you want, and I think that can have a quick and an immediate impact.
It does, and you did mention visas, and visas are critically important. What you want, and I know, my wife and I look to go on a holiday somewhere, and then you hit the visa requirements, and it's like, whoa, do we really want to? You know, and so, just make it, you arrive here. Yeah, you know, we if you're on the Interpol red list, you're not welcome in. If you're not on the Interpol red list, we do a quick scan. 5 minutes later, you're in the country. With our czar at the current point, it'd be very attractive to Europe. We're at same time zone. We're a short, relatively short flight away. We need to do the marketing point. I like your idea around those sort of crime courts that we had specifically for tourists. And it is a simple win. Infrastructure spend, $400 billion is great, but how quickly do you spend it and get it going anywhere? And how do you remove red tape and graft and all of the rest? Whereas something like tourism, and we're a tourism hungry, you were at the Kruger Park, at the other corner of the country, we've got Table Mountain, and we've got literally 3,000 kilometers of amazing country in between, and beaches and resorts and the like.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a fantastic few days in the bush. But Simon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure.
Simon Brown of Just One Lap. And that's it for this edition of the MoneyWeb at Midday Show. From myself, Rake van die Kerk, thanks for tuning in.